From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. And for some of you, it's already Thanksgiving morning, so happy Thanksgiving. And also happy 19th birthday to Coast listener Albert out there in Virginia. Have a great one, Albert. You get to celebrate Thanksgiving and your birthday. Well, President Barack Obama is to pledge to cut greenhouse gas emissions in the U.S. in several stages, beginning with a 17% cut by 2020. The offer will be made at December's U.N. climate talks in Copenhagen, which President Obama will attend. The talks aim to draw up a new treaty to supplant the 1997 Kyoto Protocol. Tim Ball is a renowned environmental consultant and former professor of climatology at the University of Winnipeg. He will be a main guest tomorrow on Coast to Coast, along with our numbers lady, Glynis McCants, two guests for you on Thanksgiving night's program. Dr. Tim Ball, Tim, in this situation, this hype about climate in global warming, your take?
Well, it's a completely phony situation. And you notice, by the way, that over the last 5 years, they've switched from talking about global warming to climate change.
Yes.
And the reason for that is because the facts are not fitting the theory or the predictions. What's been happening is since 2002, global temperature has been going down, but CO2 levels continue to rise. So CO2 is not causing the temperature change. It's not an issue. There's simply no need for a Kyoto, a Copenhagen, or any of the rest of it. But it's being played out as a political issue, and I don't know how we're going to stop it.
Dr. Ball, is this all about money?
Oh, yes. I mean, if you think about the cap and trade that is essential to Obama's budget, I think he's figuring on, I think his last budget was looking at $625 billion in revenue from cap and trade. And that of cap and trade, of course, is just another fancy term for the carbon credits that were supposedly part of the original Kyoto. And it's all about money.
Okay, Dr. Tim Ball, we look forward to talking with you on tomorrow night's Coast to Coast program for a full 2 hours. A shocking story. Navy SEALs have secretly captured one of the most wanted terrorists in Iraq. That's not the shocking part of the story. He was the alleged mastermind of the murder and mutilation of four Blackwater USA security guards in Fallujah in 2004. But three of the SEALs who captured him are now facing criminal charges. This is the shocking part of the story. The three, all members of the Navy's elite commando unit, have refused non-judicial punishment, called an admiral's mask, and they have requested a trial by court-martial. Ahmed Hashim Abed, whom the military codenamed Objective Amber, told investigators he was punched by the captors, and he had the bloody lip to prove it. Now, instead of being lauded for bringing to justice a high-value target, three of the SEAL commandos, all enlisted, face assault charges. They've retained lawyers. Man. Well, the number of newly laid-off workers filing claims for unemployment benefits fell more than expected last week, dropping below 500,000 for the very first time since January, and consumer spending picked up in October as Americans' incomes grew modestly while new home sales hit their highest level in over a year. More encouraging signals, they say, for the budding economic recovery. We'll see what happens this fourth quarter as we get into the Christmas season now. The retailers are desperate for sales. Toyota Motor Corporation says it will replace accelerator pedals on about 4 million recalled vehicles in the U.S. because the pedals can get stuck in the floor mats. As a temporary step, Toyota will have dealers shorten the length of the gas pedals beginning in January. I don't know why they don't do it right now, while the company develops replacement pedals for their vehicles. Toyota said the new pedals will be available beginning in April, and some vehicles will have brake override systems installed as a precaution. The popular vehicles, such as the Toyota Camry, the top-selling passenger car in America, and the Toyota Prius and the best-selling gas electric hybrid, are among those recalled. Also included is the luxury Lexus ES350, the model in a fiery fatal accident in California that focused public attention on this danger. And your family might be sharing more than turkey and pumpkin pie this Thanksgiving. The flu may also be on the table, and at crowded airports and shopping malls, just as the flu is waning in most parts of the country. Some health officials are now worried that holiday gatherings could lead to more infections. So the government has launched a new travel health campaign. In our last hour of our program tonight, an old friend and reporter, John Rappaport, joins us to talk about the swine flu. A man who has been sentenced to death in Saudi Arabia for witchcraft because he makes predictions on television, Ali Sabat, is not even a Saudi national. He's a Lebanese citizen. He was only visiting Saudi Arabia on pilgrimage when he was arrested in Medina last year. A court in the city condemned him as being a witch. Now, Thanksgiving morning, and after you eat and have this incredible feast, what do you do with all the turkey? Well, you try to store it, right? But did you know that if you don't do it quickly enough, you could get food poisoning, bacteria? Our food safety expert, Jeff Nelkin, on the line with us now. Jeff, so when should we put the turkey in the refrigerator after we've eaten most of it?
Well, you know, the best thing to do, again, depending upon how long you're going to have your turkey, is if you're going to be out for an extended period of time, maybe you cut that turkey in half and just, you know, after 2 hours, then you put it back. But the trick is to cut it into smaller pieces so it can cool down faster.
How quickly does the bacteria just lurch itself to the turkey, Jeff?
Well, at room temperature, you know, it starts doubling every 20 minutes. But it's, you know, the safe zone, we've got that two-hour window, and we'd like to keep it in that area. And especially if you're going to reheat to 165.
What do you see as the biggest food safety issue during Thanksgiving, Jeff?
Well, I think a lot of people kind of coughing on the food and, you know, with what's going on right now. So we want to be real careful about putting out food for too long a period of time.
All right. Thank you very much, Jeff Nelkin. Singer Juliet, she's going to appear on a UK stage for the first time in 30 years. It's a stage comeback for Julie Andrews. The Sound of Music star will be joined by an ensemble of five performers and the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra for the one-off concert, as they call it. Julie Andrews has rarely sung since 1997 when surgery on her throat impaired her incredible voice. Let's wish her well. In a moment, Tom Horn joins me as we talk about how 2012 is a pivotal time, which coincides, he believes, with prophecies not only from the Mayan tradition, but also Greek mythology, ufology, Christianity, and the Founding Fathers. Tom Horn next on Coast to Coast AM. Tom Horn, researcher, freelance writer, whose Raiders news update reports have been used by writers of the LA Times Syndicate, MSNBC, Christianity Today, WorldNet Daily, White House correspondents, and dozens of news magazines and press agencies around the planet. Tom has appeared on numerous programs worldwide and once even served as a national spokesperson for Cloud 10's picture movie, Deceived, starring Louis Gossett Jr. and Judd Nelson. He's back on Coast to Coast. Hey, Tom, how are you? Happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving to you, too. George, it's great to be back on with you again.
Like, it's a fascinating topic. I mean, the Nephilim Stargates, which is your book, and just looking at the prophecies of the Mayans, Greek mythology, ufology, I just love this topic.
Well, I saw you there the other night on the Sci-Fi Channel on a program about new revelations concerning the year 2012, and that was exciting. We have a couple of our own authors right now on a History Channel program, Nostradamus Effect, so... Yeah. Interest in the subject matter is not going away, despite the fact that NASA is trying to crush it.
Yeah, they are. Don't you find that bizarre?
It's so unprecedented. You know, you got this movie, but here's NASA. They've got their Astrobiology Institute director, David Morrison, out there griping about the viral marketing campaign, saying it's exploiting people's fears over the end of the Mayan long count calendar. You know what they're not saying, though? Yeah, and I don't know if you've went and seen the film. I took my wife to see it a few days ago, and of course it's, you know, did like $65 million or something here in the U.S. And
oh yeah, so, no, I haven't seen it yet.
Well, it's you're not going to get drug into deep character development. I mean, it just is what it is. It's just a 100 ways to tear the world up, but the opening scenes show these very powerful solar flares coming off the sun. And as soon as I saw that, I thought, well, you know, here's the irony is you've got NASA out there griping about this film And yet, that opening scene is definitely based on NASA's own report that they put out in 2006 through their National Center for Atmospheric Research, saying that in the end of 2012 or the beginning of 2013, we're going to be faced with the most powerful solar storms since records began 400 years ago, maybe the most powerful in history, and that they could, in fact, weaken the Earth's magnetic field, which protects us from the sun, and at a minimum, maybe bring down electrical grids around the world. So the interesting thing is you have them out there complaining about, this movie taking advantage of the end of the Mayan calendar and the predictions about the end of the Mayan calendar, and yet they were, they were one of the ones that contributed a great deal of anxiety about what will be happening in that year.
Tom, let's talk a little bit about your involvement in studying 2012, because this is different for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. In fact, you mentioned Nephilim Stargates. That was actually my last book. The new one's Apollyon Rising 2012. And the interesting thing, George, is I didn't set out to study the year 2012. There's an awful lot of people that have studied it, better experts than I am in terms of interpreting, Mayan prophecy and that sort of thing. But I had come across a couple of things related to the year 2012 that I hadn't heard anywhere else in the 2012 research community, and went online, did a bunch of searching around to see if anybody had talked about the same thing that I thought I had found, and couldn't find any evidence anywhere that anybody had came across the same thing, which maybe later tonight we'll get a chance to talk about its relationship to American history. And being a publisher, I have access to, scholars, molecular biologists, different people. And so I took what I thought I had found to a couple of historians, one who's a Daughter of the American Revolution History Teacher of the Year Award winner, a PhD in ancient history. And I said, look at what I think I have found. I mean, is there any stock in this? And he became intrigued with it. And one thing led to the next, ultimately wound up with over 6,000 pages of research material. And then had to try to figure out, now how are we going to compress this all down into a book of 350 pages, because I'm sure not popular enough to have a 6,000-page book anybody's going to buy, or a volume. And so it was really just it was really a matter of one thing kind of led to the next, and we thought we had found some things that were significant that wasn't already being said in the 2012 community, and so that's what happened. One thing led to the next, and we got into it, and we can talk about some of those things tonight.
Tell me about your work studying the Maya. What do you think of the Maya culture, the Maya civilization, Tom?
Well, the Maya, they were certainly very intelligent in terms of their astrological understanding. Their calendar is a lot more sophisticated than the Gregorian calendar. The European calendar is a lot more accurate. They are the ones who at least put this whole issue of the year 2012 in the public mind, or the first book written about them, I should say, is what brought this year 2012 to the surface. And so now you've got the end of their long count calendar is going to occur December 21, 2012. Some people say December 23rd. But in any case, the winter solstice, the sun's going to line up with the galactic center of the Milky Way galaxy. That's an event that occurs only every 13,000 years. The precession of the equinox is going to conclude a 26,000-year cycle. We're going to see the end of the age of Pisces. Well, the Mayans, they predicted that conjunction accurately, and they interpreted it as a harbinger of the end of the world as we know it. And here's another thing that's an interesting piece of irony, and that is that when the Mayans talk about the end of the world as we know it, we have had a lot of people come along with a very apocalyptic mind frame talking about that meaning kind of an extinction level event or the end of the world, kind of the way this movie is played out. And that's really not what the Mayans said, as far as I can understand. But on the other hand, some of the modern Mayans are now saying that it is only a transformation, which I think is true. I think that's true to the interpretation. But what it leaves out is that some of their ancient prophets, the Chilambalam, the Jaguar prophet, shaman, they did see this as a period of time that would experience social unrest, upheaval, earth
changes like we are seeing actually right now, increases in earthquakes and that sort of thing. So their prophets did see this as going through a time of real trial, but that when we come out on the other side of it, mankind is going to be improved. We're going to go through a transformation. The odometer, as some people are now saying, is going to click over. And the beginning of the next, you know, countdown is going to see an improvement to the human species. And that basically is really more in line with what the Maya were prophesying. And actually, I think, in line with what some of a lot of other ancient cultures were also saying about this same period of time.
Where did they get this knowledge, Tom? I mean,
yeah, well, listen, George, now isn't that the big question?
Yep.
Now, you know, if we look back at the ancients, and you know, there's pyramids that have sophisticated knowledge of the earth, the mean sea levels of the ocean, you know, how they even built some of these artifacts. What, you know, to this day, we still only theorize, and it's a gigantic question if we could even repeat it. They do seem to have been aware of the movement of astrological bodies, to be very aware of how these move through very long periods of time. I mean, you know, 26,000 years. And they also seem to have been aware of this wobble of the Earth, and a lot of the 2012 research community talking about that too, how the Earth wobbles on its axis and goes through this period, this cycle. This is very advanced knowledge of astrology, of the movement of the Earth itself, how the planetary bodies change very, very slowly. Certainly were light years ahead of our European ancestors, or you know, some of the people who, I guess we would date back the, you know, America coming out of Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, how they were aware of that, and some of these other cultures. You know, the Hindu Kali Yuga calendar started during the Mayan fifth great cycle. It also predicted global Earth changes in the year 2012. 200 years ago, here in the United States, the and I don't know if this has ever been talked about on your show, but maybe it has. But the Cherokee Indian tribe looked at the same thing. They talk about Jupiter, Venus, Orion, Pleiades, how the powers of the star systems are going to awaken in the year 2012. And they put forth an entire series of apocalyptic prophecies, the Cherokee rattlesnake prophecies. And as a result of those prophecies, also set their calendar to end in the year 2012. So somehow these cultures, now were they tapping into some kind of universal intelligence? Were they simply very, very great astronomers? Was it a mixture? Did they inherit this knowledge? Did it come down to them through generation somehow, either through oral history or some other method that we're unaware of? Well, it gets really complicated because some of these cultures were separated from each other not only by hundreds of miles or thousands of miles, but sometimes by thousands of years. And as far as we know, they didn't have any, you know, ability, didn't have any method that we know of for communicating directly with each other, and yet they did seem to be very, very aware that this moment in time would be important in history. Of course, the other thing that they tied into this is that this would not only be a time of trial and or of judgment, and that on the other side of it, mankind would come into an enlightened age, but they saw this year 2012 as also heralding the return of their gods. And so there are some common themes among these cultures that on one hand make you feel like they either had access to some level of knowledge, they had some method for communicating that knowledge to each other, but we don't have any records that that was happening. So then, George, that's the big question. How did they know? And I don't think anybody's got any solid answers for that.
Including Hopi prophecy, Tom, it seems like, as you've mentioned, all these civilizations have had prophetic feelings of the future. All of them. But why?
Well, because maybe there is a confluence of events that they somehow understood prophetically, and that we have entered into a period of time that is now moving in that direction. One of the most extraordinary, you know, my background, of course, is in biblical history and theology, but I have a general, almost ecumenical interest in a lot of other types of worldviews and the way different people view the same kind of phenomenon, and then each of us, of course, you know, they interpret this stuff. from within side of our own worldview. So I'm sitting in my office one day.
Well, hold on, Tom. Let's come back right into your office in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And you're all invited to our very special Thanksgiving program on our next Coast to Coast show. This one will be number 6 for me, how quickly they go by. We'll be celebrating, by the way, in January on the first Sunday that we do. Remember the first Sunday, along with Emerging Artists in January, 7-year anniversary here on Coast to Coast AM. So it'll be a special program with some guests, and we'll just have a good time. I'll be back in a moment with Tom Horn on Coast to Coast AM. George Norrie back at you on Coast to Coast AM with Tom Horn, our special guest tonight. Tom, so you're in your office. You're going to tell us a story.
Yeah, well, in my office, sitting in my office doing research actually for this book, Apollyon Rising 2012, and my phone rings, and on the other end of the line is Dr. J.R. Church. And, of course, he's a known scholar. He's got a syndicated television show. And he says, Tom, he says, I understand you're doing research into the year 2012, and in particular, you're looking for things that haven't been reported anywhere else. And I said, yeah, that's right. He said, were you aware that in the Zohar, and now, of course, you know, this is the most important work of Jewish Kabbalah. I'm very familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
A collection of books written in medieval Aramaic, you know, 700 years ago, having commentary on the 5 books of Moses, the Torah. But he said, are you aware, you know, towards the end of the Zohar, there is the Vayera section. Well, I'm familiar with that. And it contains what they call the signs heralding Mashiach, or the coming of the Messiah. Yeah, I'm familiar with that. He said, well, do you understand when you read it that the date that they set in this 700-year-old mystical prophecy about the coming of the Jewish Messiah, the date that they set for his appearance is in late 2012? Well, this just blew my mind. I said, you got to be kidding me. So I open up the Zohar. We go into the Zohar. And the reason I'm reading past this is because it's given the date in the Jewish calendar. And there it is. Lo and behold, you know, they prophesy that the priests, that Rome is going to be destroyed in the Jewish calendar year 5773, which is, in our calendar, begins in the new moon of September 2012 and concludes a year later in 2013.
My.
And the prophecy that is there is extraordinary even on another level, in that they say, you know, in the year 5773 or 2012, 2013, the kings of the world, this is the prophecy, I'm reading it, will assemble in the great city of Rome, and the Holy One will shower on them fire and hell and meteoric stones until they are destroyed, with the exception of those who have not yet arrived. And then it goes on to say this, from that time the Messiah will begin to declare himself, and around him will be gathered many nations, many hosts from the uttermost ends of the earth. Well, the reason that that also stood out to me as being extraordinary is because one of the things that has been widely reported among these various scholars of the implications of the year 2012 is the prophecy of Malachi O'Morgair, or St. Malachi, as he's known to Catholics, having to do with the last pope, and his prophecy, taken from the prophecy of the popes, predicting each of the Roman Catholic popes from Pope Celestine II to the final pope, Peter the Roman, but his reign will end in the destruction of Rome. And so, you know, many have pointed to that because, of course, you know, Benedict XVI, the pope following him, will evidently be Petrus Romanus, or Peter the Roman, and the city of Seven Hills, according to Malachi's prophecy, the city of Seven Hills will be destroyed, and the terrible and fearsome judge will judge his people at the coming of the very next pope. And so now I'm looking at these 700-year-old prophecies from these Jewish mystics talking about how their Messiah is going to come, but it's coupled with the city of Rome being destroyed, hail and meteoric stones. So here again, very similar prophecies, completely separated by hundreds of years from each other. On the one hand, you've got a Catholic prophet. On the other hand, you got Jewish mystics from the Kabbalah. So it was just another one of those things that began adding to this extraordinary amount of information that showed that different people from different cultures and even different belief systems seem to be focusing in on this year, 2012.
And it just is remarkable, Tom, how it just seems to be focal pointed toward that date of 2012. And then we see these events occurring. You know, we see things happening with the sun, the fact that it has minimal sunspots, if any. And, you know, we just see what's happening to the environment. we hear about asteroids that almost get very close. Mm-hmm. You know, we see them go past us. It's just too weird for me.
Well, you know, we started this show talking about NASA's report, but they weren't there again. They weren't the only ones. The America National Academy of Sciences, only 11 months ago, December 2008, they put forward their own 152-page report, and theirs was even more apocalyptic. They said that not only was NASA correct in their speculation about solar maximum in the year 2012, but that literally America and other and the entire world basically could be knocked off the grid for as long as 3 years. And, you know, some people are saying, regardless of these various speculations about prophecy, the judgment of the gods, the end of the world, or whatever, and some of this stuff that was certainly taken to the, you know, to the highest limit inside this new movie 2012, that beyond all of that kind of consideration, that really the idea that we could be knocked off the grid for 3 years is probably the most tangible or frightening aspect about what could be coming in the year 2012. And I was doing a radio show the other day, and the host said, well, it's kind of like being knocked back into the Old West. And I said, oh, no, it'd be a lot worse than that, because the Old West, those guys knew how to live off the land. We don't.
That's right. We don't know how to do that. We'd scramble. Now, a handful of people are survivalists. They'd be okay for a while. But the rest of us, we'd be up the creek.
It'd be big because, I mean, we depend on the grids for water, communications, fuel, medical assistance, utilities, basically everything. And you know what it made me think back about, George, was remember a few years ago, and I don't remember now what even happened, but the power went out in East Los Angeles. And remember, in one day, people were they almost burnt down East Los Angeles.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they were looting stores, and they beat that trucker up, and he got brain damage. It just shows you that if all of a sudden the grid went down, it would be pandemonium. I mean, it'd be the rule of brute law, selfish force, literally swarming cities. And you're right, it'd be a few people, Steve Quayle types. You know, they know how to live off the land.
Mm-hmm.
That might be some of the most frightening aspects of what we're talking about. And therefore, if there's any lessons to be learned, I noticed that there was a couple of news stories even this week saying that if there's anything that we could maybe learn from watching this movie 2012, it would be to take it as an omen, take it as a warning, learn how to take care of yourself to the best that you can. Of course, you know, that's not what we're talking about tonight, but I mean, you know, the Hurricane Katrina, New Orleans, we've been getting enough signal from God or the gods who are telling us, you know, you need to be in a position where, to the extent that you can, you ought to be able to take care of yourself under extraordinary circumstances.
Tom, give us odds. Give us odds based on your own assumption on whether you think when we come rolling into December 21st, 2012, some major event is going to occur or nothing happens. Give us odds.
Well, I'm stuck in a straight betwixt two, as the old prophet said. I mean, on the one hand, you know, I want to think it's just going to be the next the next Y2K. That there's going to be a lot of talk about it and a lot of doomsayers and whatever, but we're going to get there and it's not going to amount to anything. Or I want to believe that it's like, you know, some of these cults that have stood up over the years and prophesied the end of the world and, you know, 88 reasons why the world's going to end in the 1988. I still have that book somewhere. But, you know, nothing happens. On the one hand, I want to believe that that's the case. The difference between this, and this is what consistently stood out to me, is that this isn't just one group standing up somewhere prophesying. This has been over thousands of years from cultures around the world, and they all seem to be pointing to the same period of time, and that's what makes this different. That's what makes this unusual. Then when you couple with that the fact that there is phenomenon that can't be, well, at least as far as we know, is not being manufactured unless it's HARP or DARPA doing it. But, you know, we are having more earthquakes, and we are having changes to our climate. Whatever's causing the changes to the climate, there are changes that are happening. And the Earth seems to be reacting to something. And so it seems to be getting worse and worse. And right now we're in a very silent period of solar activity. But we will be in solar maximum by the end of 2012. And as far as I know, NASA and the Academy of Sciences haven't recanted their predictions that during that period of time this is going to happen. And then it does a lot of things. I mean, it can affect the Earth in a lot of ways. Most people are completely unaware of how solar flares not just only could knock out the grids, but they do a lot of things. We get started getting showered with neutrinos or whatever they call them from the sun. It can affect all kinds of things. Navigation, animals start responding to it. It could, that old thing with the alignment of the planets a few years ago could be child's play compared to what we're talking about right now. And these ancient prophets did see this as a time of great tribulation, as a time of great trial, after which then mankind would be transformed. And here's another one of the things that I think is interesting, because with my background, look at this event in Christian eschatology. And this was one of the things that I asked some of these scholars. I said, but okay, so we have all these various ancient cultures who are pointing towards this year 2012. Now, we don't have anything, in the Bible pointing towards the year 2012, but we do have this Matthew 24 and various places.
We do have the apocalypse.
We have the apocalypse. What will be the signs of the end of the world? Well, here's what my good friend David Flynn emailed me. He said, aha, but Tom, maybe you're wrong. Isn't it possible that maybe Jesus marked the year 2012 as prophetic too? I said, well, where would you see that? He said, just look at it yourself. He said, his disciples say to him, Matthew 24, tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world? And here's what David pointed out to me. He says, Jesus says to them, as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the coming of the Son of Man. They wanted to know when would be the end of the world. The Greek word, their world, is aeon. It's not the general Greek word for time, which is chronos in Greek. Aeon is the word that the Greeks used to designate a cycle of the Milky Way alignments, or the span of an age. And he said Jesus provided a very specific answer, just as it was in the days of Noah, where the astronomical signs in the heavens were just like those that are going to be at the end of the year 2012, when Leviathan had encircled the horizon in the dawn of the summer solstice. So here, once again, I put forward this inquiry to some of the best minds I know, and this kept coming back to me that maybe from all of the world's religions, minor and major, that there is some sense that we are moving towards this. So when you say, Tom, give me a prediction, what do you think? I dedicate a whole chapter. It's funny because I dedicate a whole chapter in this book, Apollyon Rising 2012, about how it's not wise to set dates. And then say, but now having said that, let's talk about the year 2012. I tell you, it really put this research is the best and in some ways the funnest, but also maybe the scariest research that I ever did. And it was because it was a real challenge. I didn't want to just, who needs another book on the year 2012 and with all respect to the people who have written those books, but there's been a great deal of, talking about the I Ching or the Webbot Project. I mean, there's been a lot of that that's been talked about over and over, and it is important research, but it's been repeated by so many people kind of robbing from the last guy that wrote about it, and I didn't want to do that. So I thought if there isn't something substantive here that has never been seen before, then why bother? There's plenty of people smarter than I am out there writing about this stuff. Of course, my discovery, what got me on this, was actually a 500-year-old Mayan prophecy that I thought directly connected to the founding of the United States. And that was where I actually started. I took that and sent that to a couple of my scholar friends and said, I think I found something here. Am I right? And that was what really led me on this pursuit. But in the meantime, of course, this other information, to me, I probably used the word extraordinary enough times tonight, but if there's another word that means the same thing, I really found it to almost be unnerving how many sages, prophets, seers, holy people, shamans, oracles looked forward and saw this date, 2012.
You talk about how the Maya connected prophetically the beginning of the United States with their beliefs around 2012. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, and actually, George, that was really the most spectacular discovery. This is what got me started. I was actually studying something that's also in the news this week and which we've done shows on before, and that is human-animal chimera research.
Yes.
But while I was doing that, I was looking for something else, and I came across this 500-year-old prophecy by the most important of the Mayan prophets, the Chilambalam, the jaguar shaman, 500-year-old prophecy in which he tied the year 2012 to what he called the colonial count, 1776. Now, right away, of course, because of the importance of 1776, it stood out to me, but I wasn't, right at first, wasn't even sure what I was reading. And this came from scholarship. This wasn't a scurrious source. This was academic Richard N. Luxton. You may even have this book. I know Steve Quayle has it. The Book of the Kumiel, the Council Book of the Yucatec Maya. Do you have this book?
No, I do not have that.
Okay, well, this is the interpretation. Richard Luxton was the scholar that translated and annotated the Book of the Kumiel, the Council Book of the Yucatec Maya. This was written in the 1500s. But as I'm reading through this research, this book, I come across something that just jumps off the pages at me, and it's where this Richard Luxton, who he doesn't say that he's a Christian, but he kind of sounds like he is because of the way he interprets a lot of things, but he is making notes on the section of the Book of the Kumiel that's dealing with Khatun 13 Ahu. And what he says about this, he says Khatun 13 from the Chilambalam focuses on, and this is literally the words, the colonial count 1776. And then he goes into his own annotations on the side talking about how the traditional theme of agreement, the end of the Eastern Khatun cycle in 13 Ahu, is, and this is his words, is intermingled with elements of the Christian Last Judgment. And then he goes on to talk about how the Mayan prophet tied this, his words, Christian Last Judgment, the Mayan prophet's words, basically the return of Bolan Yaktecu, which is also, you know, there in Torquero, mm-hmm. Mexico, upon that stone there. But he ties it to the Christian Last Judgment, but he also ties it to the year 2012. And there's this wonderful speculation in there by Richard Luxton about why this ancient prophet of Maya would have been so focused on the year 1776 and talking about it being a 13-step countdown to the year ending in 2012, the end of the Mayan long count calendar. Well, when I saw this, there's a lot of stuff right away, of course, jumped off the page at me, and of course, it could have just been a coincidence. But the fact that you have a Mayan prophet talking about fixated on 1776, talking about this 13-step countdown towards the year 2012, and of course on the Great Seal of the United States, you know, in Roman numerals, 1776, 13 steps on the unfinished pyramid, over which, and this, of course, from Rosicrucian and Freemasonic belief, you've got the all-seeing eye of Horus or Osiris or Apollo hovering above the uncapped pyramid, which itself is a prophecy. And, of course, Novus Ordo Seclorum from the Cumaean Sibyl, it's a prophecy about the coming of a god at the end of time who will give birth to a new pagan golden age or to a new world order, the Novus Ordo Seclorum. So I'm looking at the symbol, and then, of course, what I wanted to know immediately was this. Were there among America's founders, and especially those who influenced the design of the Great Seal, the layout of Washington, D.C., the Capitol Dome, etc., were they aware of these Mesoamerican beliefs? Were they aware of this? Did they know that the Maya, that the Aztec, had fixated on this year 2012? And if they did, did this play any role in influencing the way they also put together the Great Seal? Was there something here that we did not know about the design and layout of the Great Seal of the United States and other artifacts in Washington, D.C.? And I came to believe that, in fact, they did. And as a matter of fact, we were able to verify, and in a couple of cases, fabulous, irrefutable evidence that, in fact, those who were responsible for the design and layout of Washington, D.C., the Great Seal of the United States, the U.S. Capitol Dome, they were not only aware of the Mayan prophecies of the year 2012 and their calendars ending in the year 2012. They even incorporated it.
We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.